is chilly and cold. It chills the body, but not the soul. There ain't but one train on this track. It runs to heaven and I back.
Heavy time.
I failed to mention two very serious prayer concerns. Jack Scholl, whom some of you may not know, but he was here some time back and had a problem, and the ambulance came during worship to pick him up. He has entered hospice care this week, and so we want to keep Jack and Jerry in our prayers. And Bob Pedrosha had successful surgery this week, and that was a concern because, as you know, we've prayed for him for some time when he had Guillain-Barré, and it did not affect his surgery. So that's a celebration for certain. A couple of weeks ago, my young niece and nephew came over to paint with me, and they were telling me about their grandma, who is my mom, and how they beat her at cards. They were so excited to tell me that they had learned how to play canasta. Now, that's a pretty hard game for a 7- and 8-year-old to learn, but they were ecstatic to tell me about how they had stumped their nanny and won. I didn't have to ask many questions to find out the whole story because I used to play canasta with my mom when I was little. She let me lay down my cards on a chair beside me because my little hands couldn't hold all those cards that you collect with canasta. And she couldn't see the chair, supposedly. And occasionally, she would discard just the right card that I absolutely needed to pick up and win the game. I thought I was the queen of card playing because I was a kid who could clearly beat an adult. Less frequently, she made a mistake on the score pad right in front of me, and my 7-year-old niece reported this too. "You won't believe this, Auntie Robin," she said. "Nani thinks that 3 plus 4 equals 6. I had to convince her, she said. I had to tell Nani that 3 plus 4 is 7. And then she laughed at her silly Nani. And I realized anew that Nani had created these scenarios where these two young children could experience success and build their confidence, and they were learning new roles with her, and they were laughing the whole time. She didn't allow them to beat her every time, just often enough to let them believe they could really do something special. Well, today we begin a new adventure together. We're studying a book called The Path, What Chinese Philosophers Can Teach Us About the Good Life. It's written by Michael Puett and Christine Gross Lowe. And in the foyer, you will find these flyers that tell about the book and about this sermon series. I would invite you to pick one up in the foyer after church and use them to invite folk to come along and hear as we discover what's happening and how these ancient Chinese philosophers can help us in our modern-day lives. Lillian Mayer introduced the book to me several months ago. She loaned me hers, and I brought it right back after I read about 10 pages, and I said, I have to get my own. I have to mark up in this book just what I want, and I don't want to use yours to do that. And then I talked to the church council, and they picked it for our fall sermon series. So each week we're going to explore a practical topic, like today is relationships. Next week will be decisions, vitality, spontaneity, influence, and humanity. And we'll look at those things from the view of ancient Chinese philosophy, and then we'll apply it to our lives today. We'll also add in some Christian teachings about each of these aspects. So as I said, today is the topic of relationships and how we apply Confucius teachings to our relationships. Confucius lived from 551 to 479 BCE, and he was the first great philosopher in Chinese tradition. His vast and enduring influence came not from his grand, wonderful ideas, but from simply, deceptively simple ideas. Ideas that flip on its head everything we understand about how to get to know ourselves and getting along with other people. Now, what I like about Confucius, if you take most philosophy classes, the philosopher will jump in right away with life's big questions, right? Do we have a free will? What's the meaning of life? What's morality? But Confucius took the exact opposite approach in his teachings. And rather than start with these great big questions of life, he asked the most fundamental and profound question. How are you living your life on a daily basis? Because for Confucius, everything began with a question about these small things. And Confucius noted that when we recognize our daily responses to mundane things, we can actually fine-tune our lives and change them. So many of our actions, he said, we do without thinking. But if we cultivate new actions, we can refine ourselves and our relationships. So Micah Hewitt and Christine Gross-Lowe explain this process in The Path. A Confucian approach would be to note your patterns and then, and then work actively to shift them. Over time, breaking those patterns, say, suppressing your usual sigh when your father starts in on one of his political tirades, even though you're annoyed, you suppress the sigh, or making a point to greet your wife at the door when she gets home from work, even though you'd rather look at your computer screen, will allow different sides of you to emerge. And over time, you internalize a more constructive way of acting in the world instead of being led by your undisciplined and emotional reactions. So little by little, you develop parts of yourself you never knew existed, and you start becoming a better person. Most of us, of course, have certain rituals. It might be a morning cup of coffee out on the deck, or a story for a child at bedtime. Someone I know sings to her dog, but we won't go there. You might have a regular date night, or a way that you greet other people. Because human beings are all creatures of habit, and we become accustomed to doing these small things, and we do them unconsciously. But when we go through life performing the most of our social interactions by rote, Confucius says, they lose the power to become rituals that can profoundly change us. They don't do much to help us become better people. So in order to help ourselves change, first we have to become aware that breaking from our normal pattern and our ways of being is what makes it possible for us to develop different sides of ourselves. Rituals, in the Confucian sense, actually have transformative power because they allow us to become a different person for just a moment of time. Consider my story of the kids playing cards with my mom. She offered this role reversal to them in which the children could become the one who outsmarted the adult. And that short-lived change actually slightly altered the regular story, the regular reality, when the child, who is normally very vulnerable and dependent on an adult, gets to play at being a powerful person who bested an adult. And the adult gets to play at being the person who bumbles through the game. Of course, then, the child realizes eventually that it was arranged that way purposefully. But for a brief moment, they're living in what Confucius called an as-if world. For Confucius, this as-if ritual was essential to our lives and to changing and making ourselves better because of what it does for the people who are in the ritual. And he wrote that people need to act as if because it brings about a change within themselves. Modern counselors and therapists, by the way, agree with this because one person can do much for a relationship even if the other party is not willingly participating. And the way to change ourselves and our relationship is for one person in a relationship to act in a ritual as if. When you play a familial role, as if there's no discord, for example, you slowly change the way you relate and how the other reacts. And gradually doing these rituals or role plays again and again actually can create healthier connections and improved relationships. This week I noticed a saying. It spelled this concept out. It said, you can't start the next chapter of your life if you keep rereading the last chapter. Think about that. Or in the words of our Bible from Proverbs, whoever walks with the wise becomes wise, but the companion of fools suffers harm. So this role reversal or acting as if breaks the usual pattern, and the child begins to experience a feeling of competence that he or she remembers after the game is over. And the adult doesn't become a befuddled adult, but rather the role reversal helps her to develop more complex, nuanced sides of herself that she too can take into other situations. Vulnerability, connection, levity, the ability to not cling to power so tightly. And these repeated rituals help develop aspects of each of them that eventually enhance other relationships in their lives. So think of a therapist's office. I know none of you have ever been to therapy, but just imagine with me a therapist's office where people go to talk about their troubles during a set period of time. And although many of us assume that that time is helpful because we're slowly uncovering who we really are, from a Confucian standpoint, the greater benefit comes from the fact that we have created a de facto space in which we take on as if roles that we can't play outside the therapist's office, at least for the short term. And therapy can help break the patterns that dominate our lives and through these interactions between the therapist and the patient allows us to construct very different ways of relating to others. Another example, many couples say this common phrase, I love you. It happens on a semi-regular basis in most relationships. And couples who are in the habit of saying this probably don't always feel loving toward their partner every second of every day, right? But they most certainly have a bevy of complicated feelings toward their partner from time to time. But there's greater good in the nurturing of that relationship through rituals that let them break from reality and enter into a place that where they act as if they love each other fully, completely, all of the time and at every moment. Now, Eric loves me this way. I know because he tells me regularly, but I don't always feel that way. And so when we when we act as if we love each other, by exchanging those words, we express a love that we want to have, and it changes us. Quite often when someone comes to me as a pastor to talk about their feelings about a difficult situation, whether it's a grief or a relationship or a job or hurt feelings, I actually have suggested that they try an as-if ritual. I'll say, write down the hurtful thing that somebody said and burn it. If you have someone that you love who died and for whatever reason you can't go to the funeral, I suggest have a ceremony of your own, even if it's just for you. If you're sorry for something but you can't make amends for one reason or another, I say write out an apology and speak it aloud to the air. That ritual makes a difference. If you're having trouble forgiving someone the things that they did to hurt you, and you literally go outside and dig a hole, you can bury that wrong in the hole. It's a ritual, and it helps because you act as if. If the inner child within you has a memory that needs to be processed, have a conversation between your adult self and your inner child. All of these rituals are ways to change ourselves, and our models for ritual in the Christian church are very similar. We have baptisms and weddings and graduations, and we join the church, and we give an offering, and we receive communion, and we have funeral rites. As one of our biblical texts exhorts from Hebrews 10, let us consider how to provoke one another to love and do good deeds, not neglecting to meet together, as is the habit of some, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day approaching. Provoke one another to love and good deeds, it says. Meet together, encourage one another, act as if. From the before to the after of a funeral, I'm sorry, of a ritual. I don't know where that came from. From the before to the after of a ritual, we actually become transformed because instead of being led by our undisciplined emotional reactions to our situations, we begin to internalize a more constructive way of acting in the world. I think this is what Jesus talked about when he spoke of salvation. In progressive theology, salvation isn't necessarily a moment when you acknowledge your belief in Christ. Rather, it's a process of choosing to act differently in your life because your life has been changed from the inside out. And so salvation isn't about getting some eternal reward after death, but it's about learning to live every single day in a new way with the possibility of new life right here and now, right inside you. The German philosopher Immanuel Kant, who lived from 1724 to 1804, thought along these same lines, and he argued that no matter your situation, you should act as if your action could become universal law for anyone in any situation. Can you imagine that? That what you do and what you say could become universal law for anyone in any situation. And these ordinary as if rituals are the means by which we can imagine new realities, new life, new relationships over time, and actually construct new things in our lives. Imagine what great worlds we could create if we ritualized our vision to change the world, and we did it one interaction at a time. That's your challenge this week from Confucius, to go out and change your interactions one at a time by acting as if, and whatever you want the outcome to be. Next week, we get to talk about decisions and ancient Chinese philosophy as well as our Christian faith. I hope you'll come back and join me on this path toward a new life. Amen. Our closing hymn is a new one to some of us. As the deacons go out to get ready for our fellowship dinner, I'm inviting you to stand and listen to the choir as they sing our final hymn. And if you know it, you can join in, and next week we'll all know it. Please stand.